Just behave yourselves and act like men.
Now you start using your head. That's not love. That's 3 feet above your ass.
People will come, Ray.
All right, don't try to strike everybody out. Strikeouts are boring. Besides that, they're fascist.
We don't stink right now.
You play ball like a girl!
You're out of here!
There's no crying in baseball!
High fly ball into right field. She is gone!
This is West Coast Bias.
Dynamite drop in, Monty. That broadcast school has really paid off.
Thank you for listening once again. We are back. Are we back?
We're back. We're back. We're still alive. We are healthy. We are here, coming to you again. What is this? About 4 months since our last published.
It's been over 100 days, and not quite four. It has been four, hasn't it?
Oof. I think so.
Yeah, we were a bit cavalier in our attitude toward the COVID corona entanglement back in March.
Yeah, I think
but we're still here. And baseball's back. So that's
Way back, of course, on February 2nd, the groundhog did, in fact, see its shadow, and apparently it was right on this time. Everyone just
stay home.
Is this a
metaphorical winter? Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, it's been weird. It's been weird, but you know, there's a semblance of normalcy coming back.
We think.
Yeah, you are currently wearing a mask, my friend.
I am,
as we are in a very tight space.
This is to protect you and any future users of this equipment. And
I do appreciate that. So if it does sound a little strange,
I'm because, double filtered. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. But you know, we're just gonna roll with it. It's been too long, and
it has.
And we do apologize. Man, are you excited?
I am excited. Yeah. There's something to talk about. There's something to watch on television in 5 days. The Giants and A's are gonna be broadcasting a scrimmage game.
Yeah, I've been scraping. Well, that's why you've been watching some of these intra team games.
I have a few for a little bit, but nothing. Right. I haven't like sat down and watched any baseball, just sort of in passing. And it's been really hard to occupy my mind without baseball.
It's weird.
It's been very strange.
At first, I was thinking, oh, okay, I'm not going to be, you know, muddling all my brain and my thinking power with baseball stats and all this stuff. I'll have all this extra free room in my brain to like learn French or
parlez-vous français?
No.
Okay.
but none of that happened. In fact, I've been a lot more slovenly and sloth-like these last 110 odd days or so. But I have been cooking more. I've been cooking literally every day. So
yeah, that's great. I've been riding my bike several times a week.
Nice.
So.
Yeah, it was getting a little grim there in the beginning because I was eating the same as I was before, but I wasn't leaving the house or getting any physical exercise whatsoever. And then my pants stopped fitting completely. So
yes,
you know. I had to cut out breakfast, basically, is what I'm saying.
Well, I'm sweating like Roger Ebert.
Yeah, it's so, but I, 100, over 100 straight days, which was pretty nice, and so at least there is that. I learned how to cook. How about that?
That's a good skill to have.
Yeah, I think so. How have you been biding your time, as it were?
Well, I've been doing a lot of cooking as well. I've been playing a lot of video games and watching TV and riding my bicycle, as I just said. You know, it's been, I've been fortunate enough to be able to shelter in place in the house that I grew up in with my parents, outside of the city. And, it's been weird. It's been very much like a summer vacation without, you know, going to the baseball games every Sunday.
Right.
It's, So it's been very
been lounging
strange.
On the beach, riding bikes, hanging out with hot chicks, or what's going
no,
on?
No, unfortunately, not of that. The beach that is closest to the house has been gated off for the duration, and hasn't even opened when the rest of the beaches have opened.
Really? Even on the 4th?
Especially on the 4th.
Wow.
They shut down all the beaches on the 4th. But the specific one that is closest to the house that I grew up in, has been and remains to be totally blocked off. You can see it from up above, but you can't get down to it.
I don't feel sorry for you. I've been stuck in an apartment for the last 4 months straight. So
I understand completely, and I do consider myself lucky to be able to leave my little tiny apartment. So
yeah, well, welcome, and thank you everybody again for joining us. Remember to email us at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. A few quick notes. We are now officially on Spotify. We have been on Spotify for a little while. We are now on Stitcher, and we are now on the brand new Google Podcasts, whatever that is. So, as well as, of course, iTunes or Apple Podcasts, and the Podomatic website, where you can always leave comments, questions, concerns, observations about life in general. But yes, we are fully fluid. I don't know.
We're available. We're ubiquitous. We're everywhere where you can get your podcasts.
Yeah. So you have no excuse now.
And share with your friends.
Yeah.
Hoo-ah!
Yeah, that's right.
How do you...
Ooh, a little too soon. I jumped the gun. You know, I'm a bit rusty.
Yeah, you're out of practice.
Thank you. Okay, it's going to take some time. Now, let's just get right into some of these things, man, because this has been going on. Now, this is the 100th anniversary this year of the Negro Leagues. Which doesn't get nearly enough credit or press throughout every other year. And hopefully this year we'll start to see a little bit more. And on August 16th, all players, managers, coaches, and umpires will be wearing a Negro Leagues 100th anniversary logo during all games. Now, my question is, why aren't they doing this the entire season?
I know. This
one day? Come on.
Yeah. I don't know why they can't just go ahead and put that patch on all of them.
Yeah,
it's just a patch.
Well, but you know, in a lot of ways, it's a lot more than that. It's symbolic of baseball's history. You know, whether MLB wants to admit it or not, and at least they're doing this, I guess.
Yeah,
but
and
it is
some acknowledgement is better than no acknowledgement, right? But.
It should be the entire, 60 games. Come on.
60 games. It's been 100 years since the start of it. That's a pretty big anniversary. Let's go ahead and...
It's pretty huge. Now, today...
Celebrate it all year.
Today is July 15th.
It is.
And speaking of Negro Leagues, do you know what happened back in 1932 on this date?
In 1932, no. What
you
I
were
found,
a wee boy. You were still in diapers.
I was just a wee lad, but definitely a very big baseball fan even back then.
Yeah.
No, I know what happened on this date in 1994. That's what I found.
What happened in
1932?
In 1932, Pittsburgh Crawford's pitcher Satchel Paige pitched a no-hitter against the New York Black Yankees. You know. I mean, one of probably a score or two of no hitters he probably had throughout his life. Yeah. He had 1,000 wins or something. Is that what he said?
The stories surrounding that guy are pretty outstanding.
I believe every single one of those stories, including the one where Phil Jackson batted against Satchel Paige and got a double. Have you heard about this?
Phil Jackson? No.
Phil Jackson, the former
coach of the Chicago Bulls.
Yeah, 11-time champion. I think he has 11 rings, something crazy like that. Yeah, Phil Jackson. Yeah, you know, because he played basketball in the 50s or 60s, I guess. But in the 50s, he was living in the Dakotas or Nebraska, I don't know, someplace up there. And Satchel Paige was on like a barnstorming team in his late 50s, which if he says he's 56, he's really like 63, because even he didn't know his own age, which is pretty amazing. And he, Phil Jackson was like 6'6". I mean, he was a big dude back then, all
as all, basketball player, fingers and toes, yeah, traditionally, or
all arms and legs, and he was a pitcher back then. But anyway, he came up and had an AB against Satchel Paige, and got it strung a double up against him, hit the wall. According to him, and I don't think he would lie about
that. That was probably better than what his best player, Michael Jordan, might have been able to do off of Satchel Paige. But
right. Well, no, hey, look.
Having trouble hitting Jordan, that wicked double-A curveball, but...
It's not, look, double-A is arguably the real test. Triple-A is kind of just like a feeding ground for the majors, but double-A is when you cut your teeth. And Jordan wasn't that bad, you know. I mean, Terry Francona, at least in the... I don't know if you watched the Last Dance, you know, the like 8-part Jordan documentary, or Bulls documentary, that came out last month or so, which... I've had ample time, and of course I watched all those because that was really interesting. That was when I actually used to watch basketball, I feel like, when I was younger. Right. But anyway, yeah, Terry Francona is in it, and he talks about, you know, because he was the manager of the Chicago, was it?
The
White Sox affiliate.
Yeah. I don't remember.
Anyway, he said he wasn't that bad, but and he wasn't. If you've seen that 30 for 30, Jordan Rides the Bus, he really wasn't that bad, and he got better as he progressed. Anyway, we're not talking about basketball anymore. But what happened in 1994 on this date?
Well, it was a bit more scandalous than perfect game.
Ooh.
He is a sick puppy.
Ooh.
It involves alleged cork-backed.
Oh, Albert Bell.
Albert Bell was challenged by then White Sox manager Gene Lamont. He thought that the cork may have been bat.
The bat may have been corked.
The bat may have been corked, yeah.
They confiscated the bat.
Right,
they put it in the umpire's office.
Right, umpires took the bat to be inspected later.
Right.
And then... a Cleveland pitcher, Jason Grinsley. He crawled through the ceiling, broke into the umpire room, and switched Albert Bell's bat.
Like Mission Impossible stuff right there.
Totally
right?
Totally Mission Impossible.
Greased himself up, went in through the air duct. It's amazing.
And he switched it with Paul Sorrento's bat. I forget.
Who I'm sure had his name on the bat.
I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure. It was very obviously a different bat. I don't recall exactly how he was caught.
Well, because the umpires went in and saw it was Paul Sorrento's bat. And then they gave him like a 5-game suspension or something like that. But he didn't get the full wrath of what he would have got if they found the actual cork bat, because he probably would have been done for the season or something
probably.
Like that. You know?
Yeah. That's a pretty big hit.
Yeah, that is pretty good.
That was this day in 94.
Now, speaking of the Dodgers, do you remember what happened exactly 3 years ago today, if we're talking about milestones?
3 years ago today,
yes,
that
sir.
Would have been...
July 15th, 2017.
Speaking of the Dodgers, no, I don't remember what happened in this state in Dodgers history.
Well, of course you do. Of course you don't, because I'm sure you pushed it out of your brain. That was just a day when Cody Bellinger went 4-for-5 and went for the cycle. Pretty good. Pretty good, Cody. Let's hope you can do that again.
Well,
got really silent.
He would have been... had already been able to warm up more than 60 games before he got to that point. Is he going to get off to a hot start this year?
Oh, hell yeah. Oh, he's hungry. We got two MVP outfielders on that team. We have who I think is... This is and we're going to get into predictions a little bit later. But I have a prediction that out of all the Dodgers this year, Justin Turner is going to be the real MVP candidate. I really believe... this guy's going to be hitting 330, 340. He's going to have, I don't know, let's say 12, 15 home runs. I mean, this year it's going to be kind of strange to see how what the home run leader is going to have. But I think he's going to be in line. I think this will be his best year, his best chance to win MVP, because this is all about starting off hot, right? Now, is there a difference between starting off hot in April and starting off hot in July? I don't know. It's tough. Maybe some guys prefer the cold. Maybe starting off in July is going to be the exact same thing for some of these guys. Do we know? I don't know.
Well, I mean, some players say that they need the summer heat to really get their swings going, and April and May just doesn't cut it, and that's their excuse for not coming out of the gate swinging. Now, you know, here they are. They've been off now for 3 months and only about 2.5 weeks of intra-squad games to really tune up and be ready for the season.
Right.
So we'll really see if it's the heat that makes a difference, or it does actually take several at-bats, you know, 100 at-bats or so, to really get your timing and into a groove.
So who do you think has the advantage, pitchers or batters?
Well, they say that usually it's the pitchers that have the advantage at the beginning, because once their arm strength is there and they can really, you know, have that arm slot, find it early, hitters take a little longer to get the timing down to really start being able to hit with much consistency.
Couldn't you say the same thing, though, about a pitcher's arm? You know, I always think of somebody like Corey Kluber, and I've had him in fantasy leagues throughout the years. Not last year, luckily, but... And he always, at least every time I've had him, which I guess is maybe twice, maybe three times, he starts off poor, almost always. I mean, the last time I had him, he was like 0-5 on his first, and then like on his like seventh start, he had that 20 strikeout game or 18 strikeout game. It was just insane. And then he was lights out after that. So I worry about guys like that. And I wonder if, because pitchers can go to the batting machine and they can get 95-mile-an-hour fastballs, they can get 90-mile-an-hour curveballs. They can just practice. But pitchers, it seems like, it's a lot. It's varied. Pitchers always have the advantage, right? I mean, the best hitters in baseball history only hit a third of the time, right, obviously. So pitchers generally have the advantage. But, you know, when you only need one run to win a game, I mean, do they have the advantage? I don't know. That actually, we got a letter here from Marissa Gonzalez in Oakland, and she's asking pretty much this, like, how are you guys evaluating the potential differences between projected stats on players given the shortened season? Yeah, this is tough.
Yeah, it definitely is. It's definitely something to think about and look at, and need to be aware of which players, both hitters and pitchers, who traditionally get off to a good start. They have a good April and May.
Right.
And those are the guys that probably will have the best season this year, because their season is just the first 2 months out of spring training, right, as it were.
Yeah. And, you know, when thinking about fantasy stats for pitchers, mainly starting pitchers who may be in the line for a win, a stat might be worth looking into would be average innings, teams got per start, you know. And so I was looking at these, and so basically, like, the average innings a starter goes for each individual team, and you can look at it all, like 1 through 30. And on the very, very bottom of that list, or the very top of that list, I guess, if you're saying in terms of poor, low averages, is the Angels at only 4.2 innings per game started. So if you're looking at a guy, like, maybe you have, and so, okay, so on the contrary, or on the flip side of that, would be the bottom five teams, or which would be the top five teams in terms of innings, average innings started, would be the Dodgers, Astros, Indians, Nationals, Mets. So you may prefer taking a fourth or fifth starter on one of those teams rather than like an Angels second or third, you know, in like the middle rounds of the draft, knowing that he probably won't go as long in the games as some of these other teams. Now, of course, we have to worry about the DH and for the National League,
right,
pitchers. So their stock is going to go down slightly, but I don't know. It's a tough call. So just on the bottom of that, just to reiterate, the Angels are the worst. But then you have the Rays, the Blue Jays, the Mariners, and the Yankees. Now, the Rays doesn't really seem to affect them because they've been playing this game and this style for years now. This sort of piecemeal pitching staff, and it's gotten them to the playoffs over and over and over. Angels, on the other hand, obviously aren't that lucky. But they do have Anthony Rendon now, you know.
So, right.
That could help. You know, the Angels did add some starters and are willing to do sort of openers, and they have been in the past, and the Blue Jays and the Mariners seemingly always try to figure out how to use a starting rotation that works. And the Mariners already announced that they'll start the season with a six-pitcher rotation. You know, but then there are the Rays, the Brewers, Yankees, you know, teams are being motivated despite having a good stable of pitchers. Yeah, it just seems that back-end pitchers on teams in the top five here are going to be bad bets, you know, when you think about wins and bulk innings. So
quality
even,
starts.
Yeah, and even guys, you know, that would normally eat up some innings and maybe be in line for a win might not be the best bet nowadays. You know, guys maybe like Taijuan Walker, Jordan Lyles, Ryan Yarbrough. Probably not guys you're really looking at too heavily during the draft, but maybe back end, like, you know, later on, you know, rounds like 17 through 20 or so, you know, you still do need those wins in those leagues that do that. Obviously, in our league that we're in together, we don't count wins, but most leagues do. And most leagues have probably already drafted by now, but a lot of leagues haven't. In fact, our draft is coming up on Saturday.
Right.
So, you know, you kind of have to take all this with a grain of salt, obviously. But in terms of, like, what we were talking about earlier, like, is the shortened season going to be better for hitters or pitchers? There are different ways to look at it. And, you know, Phil Dussault of NFBC makes an argument that if you look at how pitchers and hitters provide value over a full season versus a half season, there's some evidence that hitters need that full season of ups and downs to give their full return, whereas pitchers aren't as sort of wed to needing a full season of sample. He looked at the relationship between ADP and half season value and actually found that starting pitchers might be a better bet than hitters. So, you know, he basically looked to see where the top hitters in starting pitchers, the top hitters and the top starting pitchers in the first half value and where that came from. So looking at the top 44 hitters and the top 20 starters since 2016, 11 hitters and 5 starting pitchers per year. Hitters, only 30 out of the top 44 were drafted within the first 5 rounds. And starting pitchers, 19 of the top 20 were drafted in the first 5 rounds, which with Rue being the sole exception in 2019. So that being said, it's kind of clear, though, that starting pitchers should be going earlier in drafts, not later, because of that. So I think, you know, there is something to be said about maybe reaching a little bit sooner for a starting pitcher than a batter, just given the shortened season. So it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, it is. It is very interesting, and it is something that definitely be studying the next few days leading up to our draft. You know, it'll change the whole dynamic of how the game is played strategy-wise on the field, and, you know, how the individuals will respond to such a truncated season. I think it's about each, you know, generally first 2 months of a baseball season, you're not generally so concerned about individual stats, because there is so much to go. But now, with only 60 games, each game is worth 2.7 games of any other season. You know, so it's going to happen that everything is going to happen that much faster. Everything is going to mean that much more. Every hit is going to be so much more important. Every run is going to be so much more important.
Are you worried about like guys' individual counting, like guys pressing too hard?
Guys pressing too hard, trying to find something that isn't there, and
right,
you know, guys that generally don't get off to a good start are gonna see their percentage stats fall off. Everyone's going to see and their counting stats fall off, but the percentage stats, I think we're going to see some changes in what is the norm, because guys are going to be pressing. Guys are going to be trying too hard to get that hit.
Yeah. Now, I always think of a guy like Joey Votto, who normally, and he's even said it himself, he's usually kind of sluggish in the beginning, and he always sort of finds it by the middle of the season. Or even a guy like Paul Goldschmidt, who's a perennial all-star, you know, probably be a Hall of Famer if he continues what he's doing. Just always consistent. But, you know, we watched last year how slow of a start he got. I mean, guys were dropping him in some leagues. He was that
right
sort of not bad, but so average for a couple months there. And people were freaking out, you know. So guys like that, you know, I wonder about, because if I see Paul Goldschmidt like in the second or third round, I'm definitely going to get him. But like, is that going to be the best thing to do? Should I be looking at guys like Justin Turner? Is he going to be more valuable than a guy like Goldschmidt? Because Turner almost always starts the year hot, you know. And that's why I'm really going to be keeping an eye on him in terms of MVP this year. Now, obviously, counting stats, yeah, we're not going to be seeing guys hit like 40 home runs or anything like that. I mean, although who knows?
We hope.
Who knows? Yeah, exactly. So does that also like put a guy like Pete Alonso down a little bit? You know, last time I think we talked about how he's due for a regression. You know, you hit 51 home runs in a year when everybody's breaking the home run records.
Right. Well, maybe
he's not. He's probably not going to be that good. But
maybe it's good to know, because if he does hit less home runs, no one will actually notice this year. Because of course he hit.
The fantasy owners, we will notice. We will notice. Yes.
What a predicament.
Yeah, it's going to be kind of there's no real right or wrong answer to how should you draft in this one. In a lot of ways, you know, you might get lucky, but I think going with guys that historically start strong is probably a good option. You know, obviously don't go super high on like Kyle Schwarber, like don't pick him like in the third round or something like that, but you know what I mean. Sort of on the same topic, we got another email from Pablo F. in Fullerton. He asks, do you envision any single season records happening this year, i.e. starting pitcher ERA under 1? Well, that's interesting. Or team winning percentage, etc.
I think that's a distinct possibility.
Yeah.
Because strange things happen in 2-month stretches.
Yeah.
That wouldn't otherwise, you know, correlate to something similar happening through this normal 6-month season.
Right. Not even just second half, first half. Not even 82 games. It's 60 games. Man. Now, we did see Jack Flaherty do that last year, right? He had a sub-1 ERA in the second half. I mean, that guy was unconscious. So, I mean, take 20 games off of that. It almost seems inevitable that a starting pitcher is going to have a sub-1
ERA. If you got a guy who comes out of this summer camp who's totally in a groove and just firing rockets, and no one's catching up to him until 3/4 of the way through the season, you know, that's going to be huge.
Especially if he's only going 5 innings.
Right.
He hasn't given up a run. He's only seen the order twice, maybe 2.5 times around. Then they pull him. That doesn't seem impossible, really.
The only thing is, because of the way that the new schedules are drawn up, you're going to see a lot of the same guys more often.
Right, that's true.
In a shorter amount of time than you ordinarily would also.
That's an interesting wrinkle there. That's true. And so in that same vein, I mean, I guess it would kind of work against them slightly, but guys like Kenta Maeda or, you know, guys that are in the Central Division now, you know, because he's a Twin now, right? Guys like that are going to be, I think we should value them a little bit more.
The ones that are in a new
Michael
league.
Fulmer.
In a new division.
Well, just in any of the Central, because the NL Central and the AL Central especially, they're just garbage. They're just, I mean, those are going to be really good. The pitchers are going to feast on those teams, I would imagine. So, I wouldn't sleep on those guys. In fact, we might even reach a little higher for them. And Maeda has never had a problem with longevity. So he can easily go 5-6 innings.
Is he one who usually gets off to a good start coming out of spring, though?
That's interesting. I don't know. And especially in a new home, he hasn't pitched there yet, right?
Well, I don't know if that affects a pitcher as much as it would a hitter, unless, of course, it's a smaller ballpark. You know, someone going from...
Target Field's pretty small. From Dodger Stadium? Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely...
And playing in some of those small ones like Wrigley is also very small, too. He'll be playing there.
Yeah. But at night, not during the day. You see this? Wrigley's not going to have any day games.
Yeah, there's not going to be any. I don't think that anyone's going to have
any.
Yeah,
I think that's more to take advantage of TV and the audience at home coming off of work and everything like that. It makes
sense. Not that there's still 30 million of us out of work. God.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Oh, I thought you were going to talk about the fact that we can't even watch certain games.
Oh well, we can get into that now or later, but yeah, the blackout rules apply.
It's been too long. I want to hear it. That brings us to this week's Ignoble Award of the Week.
So I had a couple of ideas for the Ignoble Award.
Give them to me.
The first one is the owners collectively. With this whole collective bargaining early on, it was still May when they started talking about, well, let's get the season going, let's get as many games so we can go in. The players agreed to take a prorated cut in their salaries. They just wanted to play.
Right.
And then nothing seemed to happen.
Yeah.
And then they started talking, okay, we're going to open up. And we're only going to do 60 games. And it was this whole back and forth where it just didn't seem like the owners wanted to actually play. And they kept squeezing the Players Association, trying to give them up more money than they already had.
Right.
Even though it's the players that is taking all the risk.
Yeah.
Of being out there, being exposed to other people. And...
plus the fact that none of those guys are billionaires. No player is a billionaire.
Right.
You know, even the highest paid players are not billionaires. And it's a lot harder for them to take that hit, especially when the owners want them to pay for lost proceeds from concessions and the stands and tickets. I mean, if I was a player, I'd be like, that's literally your job. Like, you are the owner. You know, if you own an apartment building and the pipes burst, yeah, that's on you. You don't ask the tenants to all pay for those pipes. I mean, that's just crazy. It's your building. It's your team. Take the hit.
Exactly. So, I mean, there is that. And now they come down with this announcement that all the blackout rules will still apply.
For TV?
For TV.
How do you sleep at night?
Awful.
Which means that even though we have no way to go and watch the game live, if you're not paying for cable, you cannot watch the games in your local market.
Even if you pay MLB directly.
Even if you pay them directly, they will still not let you watch the team that is from the place where you live.
Yeah, so I'm obviously a Dodger fan living in San Francisco, so I can never watch the games when the Dodgers play the Giants. Which is ridiculous, and it always enrages me because I don't pay for cable, but I do pay the $130 a year at MLB.TV. Yeah.
As a Giants fan, I know that the most exciting games to watch are the Giants and Dodgers games.
Of course.
I'm sure that it's the same the other way.
Yeah. Even if the Giants are in last place and Dodgers are in first, doesn't matter.
It's always the most intense, most fun games to watch and certainly go to. And I, you know, the only reason why I pay for a cable is so I can watch the Giants on TV on those rare occasions that I'm home to be able to watch them. Because usually I work at night, and that's when the majority of the games are on.
It's absurd. You know, I didn't even think about that. You're right. We can't go to the game.
Right.
We literally aren't allowed to go.
Right.
They should rescind all those blackout restrictions.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I think that goes. I think the owners, for those two reasons, all 30 of them, 32 of them, however 30. Many, 30 of them, there are 30
football.
Of them, plus Manfred, They all get the Ignoble Award. It's a shared Ignoble Award this week, and possibly just blanket them for the rest of the season. And it's the only reason why I watch cable. Is if I could watch the Giants on my computer streaming, I would.
Yeah, 100%.
But I can't, so no reason for me to do it.
So what is that going to be like? Basically a third of the games I wouldn't even be able to watch.
Yeah.
Plus the three games we're going to be playing Oakland.
Yeah.
I won't be able to watch that. That's Jesus included. Christ, it's over 30. Oh, my God.
Well, couldn't possibly be any dumber.
Yeah, this
is... five games against Oakland and 10 games against the Giants you will not be able to watch.
Well, luckily we're doing three against Oakland, but... and they're all in LA, but that doesn't matter. Yeah. It's so ridiculous. Yeah, and now they want me to pay another fee just to watch the Dodgers. I mean, I do want to watch the Dodgers play the Astros, but I want to be there when they're, you know. God.
Well,
The Dodgers are only playing, four against the Astros. We're playing the most against the Angels in terms of interleague games. That's six. Looks like four in Seattle, three in Texas, three Oakland. But the last six games are at home, but they're all against American League teams. And that's a strange way to end your season. And, I know everybody has complaints about their team's schedule. And, you know, the Dodgers have a three-city road trip. I don't think every team has that.
The Giants have two.
Three-city road trips. Jesus. Now, for both of us, you know, one's probably Oakland, and, you know, obviously one's the Angels, which is only 30 miles away, but still.
Only on one of them, but, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That, and so I guess everybody has a gripe on the schedule of their team. It is kind of strange, you know. It's just weird to finish the season with two American League teams.
It is. I will agree with you on that. For the most part, you know, the way that they did the schedule definitely makes sense. I just wish that it would be a little bit more even in terms of where the games are played.
The Giants schedule is great to me. I think it's fine. So
the fact that the Giants play seven of the 10 games against the Dodgers in LA seems
That seems
ridiculous to me, but
that's a clown question, bro.
That seems fair to me.
And I think that, you know, some of the other division opponents are similar. That it's heavily weighted to one park or the other, rather than having, you know, even distribution of games that each stadium sees.
Yeah. So we're not going to give the Ignoble Award to Buster Posey. Is that what you're saying?
No.
The only decent player on the team to say forget it.
I mean, I understand his reasoning and everything, and I don't think it's ignoble. It's maybe the disappointment award of the game, but ignoble, it's not.
No, I know it's not. But, you know, I'd be pretty pissed if I was a Giants fan, I would imagine. Now, on the plus side, you know who is back? Kenley Jansen.
I did hear that. He was diagnosed with the COVID.
With the COVID, yeah, man. Apparently, his son got it, and then the rest of his family got it. And 3 weeks. He was out for 3 weeks. He's finally cleared, and then I watched him yesterday. Pitched a four-out inning. He finished the game, and then he's like, "Nah, I want to do one more." So then they just, you know, he just had another AB, which is pretty good. But it was only like eight or nine pitches, though. So hopefully he gets a little bit more work. I mean, he was getting people out left and right, so it looked great. Pedro Baez was weirdly absent with Scott Alexander also. And I guess they finally just reported to summer camp like yesterday, the 14th or the 13th possibly. Because I haven't heard anything about them. And, you know, obviously with the HIPAA rules, they're not allowed to say if a guy has COVID or not until, I guess, after they can say. Because Kenley, we didn't know. And then now, of course, he said that he had it, so that's okay. And A.J. Pollock as well. He was absent until, I think, yesterday or the day before. So maybe we'll find out that all those guys had it, and I don't know. Maybe that's a good thing? I don't know.
the injured reserved list is going to be an interesting one to watch this year.
So they have a separate one for COVID, right? But they're not allowed to say it. So it's going to be strange.
It's
going to
be very strange. It's going to be, this year just keeps getting weirder and weirder. There's no doubt about that. But
yeah, I also forgot, because all this stuff happened, I kind of forgot about like a lot of the big acquisitions that had happened in the offseason. And, and he's probably not his like 2016 self, but, Dodgers got Big Sweat, Jimmy Nelson, So that'll be cool, man. I mean, if he's his old self, he's lights out. And then Blake Treinen, of course, one of the best closers in the game, will be our setup guy, or maybe closer if we need him. And Brusdar Graterol, the flame-throwing guy we got in the Maeda trade? Yeah, in the Maeda trade. Yeah, so I still haven't seen him pitch, That'll be cool. Dodgers looking tough, man. Good luck.
Yeah, well, they'll have a big advantage if they can get off to a hot start. And if they can get out to a 4 or 5 game lead over the rest of the division, they'll have a real advantage going throughout.
5 game lead, yeah. That'll just about seal it.
It would seem, because it's not a whole lot of time to make up games.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to seeing the Angels in the very end of the season, especially with now that they have Rendon, and obviously Trout, who...
And
now, Trout, I was thinking, we were talking about this off-air, but we were thinking of who could potentially win the home run crown this year. Maybe guys that normally wouldn't over a 162-game period. My money was on Trout. But then I found out his wife is about to pop and she's going to give birth like any minute now. And so he's definitely going to miss like 10% of the games, which doesn't seem like a lot, but that's a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so fantasy owners are scrambling and a little pissed off, rightfully so, and trying to figure that out. But hopefully his baby comes out, in about 55 days or so. That'd be nice. Or
just in time 70 for the playoff, days from now. Huh?
Yeah. Maybe he'll just sit out that last week or something. The Angels could do it, and I'm rooting for them. I would like to see them win the West. I'd like to see Oakland win the West, really. But
just as long as it's not the Astros.
Just as long
good,
as
right?
It's not the Astros, because now I know that there is a God and that he's an Astros fan, because... What a year to not have people in the stands. Are you kidding me? People aren't going to be there to boo them incessantly. There is no justice in the world.
Yeah, but on the other hand, the stadiums are going to be quiet enough that everyone will be able to hear the pounding of the trash cans. So.
Yeah. That
I got hairy legs.
That is true. All right, that just completely derailed me. Now you, my friend, are wearing a mask.
I am.
And Clint Frazier of the Yankees has stated that he will continue to wear a mask throughout the games. He's been wearing them in BP. He's been wearing them in the intra-squad games. Yeah, and he was saying, he doesn't mind it. He said it was a little weird at first, but he's going to do it. He's going to go the whole season wearing a mask. And it kind of makes sense, seeing as how DJ LeMahieu, Luis Sessa, or Aldis Chapman now have all tested positive for COVID. And in New York, where it seems like, everything's dirty and gross and everybody's got it, maybe it's not the worst idea. Or is this perhaps an act of selfishness because he's actually trying to grow a beard and skirt the Yankees' facial hair policy?
I don't know. I think that it's a good idea to wear a mask. I am wearing a mask, and as I walked in here, the first thing that you said to me was, "Oh, you're bearded." So
yeah,
obviously wearing
a
mask does not hide the fact that you have facial hair.
That is true. Well, so, yeah, I guess you're right. If it's a big enough, if it's like one of those buffs, like they have in Survivor, maybe something like that.
Yeah, maybe a little goatee would fit under undisclosed under the mask, but
yeah.
I think if the players are serious about safety among themselves, they will wear the masks. I think it's a good idea if they do. It sucks. It might make it a little bit harder to breathe, but not nearly as hard to breathe as You would if you got the virus.
Yes, I would imagine that as well. Now, Walker Buehler hasn't pitched a full sim game yet. And that's been kind of worrying me a little bit. And Dave Roberts was saying that, yeah, he's a little behind Buehler, right now, but he should Buehler, be okay. And he is young.
Buehler.
But I'm getting a little nervous, you know. We will see. But here's Roberts on how he thinks the guys are feeling right now.
Pitchers might be a tick ahead. And but I think the hitters are really holding their own, taking some good at bats. But I think, you know, if I had to pick one right now, I would say the pitchers are a tick ahead. But I expect that to even out pretty soon, especially with our guys.
Yeah, hopefully that's true. And because this is a little bit what we were talking about earlier, and the batter's starting off hot. Now, the pitchers might have a slight advantage. But this also was a couple days ago. So, you know, the guys have to ramp up really fast right now. And it's not the easiest thing in the world. Especially when you have to start competing, and when all the games are going to really matter. You know?
Yeah, this is essentially, it's going to be the pennant race right out of the gates. It's going to be it can be a lot of fun. It could be very disappointing for some teams at the same time, but it could be a lot of fun for everyone.
It's going to be each game, and that's why I'm so mad. I'm not going to be able to watch a third of them. Apparently, you know, which is ridiculous. Now, I want to talk a little bit about zombie players.
The zombie players?
Yeah, how about... It might not exactly be fair to call these players zombies, but could we see a resurgence in players that did not play at all last year, that were dead to baseball, so to speak, in 2019? You know, because I was watching a little BP of Cespedes with the Mets this week, and this guy just looks like a monster right now. I mean... And now, especially given the fact that there's going to be a DH, there's probably going to be a spot for him.
Right. Well, I think it's very possible. I think that for a lot of guys who were injured or recovering from injuries over the off season, got an extra 3 months of rest and recovery time. It could benefit a whole lot of players that don't otherwise get enough rest. And maybe that'll help with some guys who are off injured. The shorter season may reduce the risk of injuries that,
That tend to accumulate. Happen. Yeah. Now, Cespedes obviously hasn't played in basically 2 full years. Given his injury shortened 2018 season and the fact that he didn't play a single game last year, and he's now 34, so obviously his defensive days are behind him. But DH doesn't seem out of the question. I mean, you know, in the 2017-2018 seasons when he was still fighting off injuries like left and right, he still put up a slash line that's 282, 343, 525 with 132 OPS plus. I mean, that's...
Which is totally... acceptable.
Yeah. And let's not forget, he was back-to-back home run derby champ when he was younger. So if he doesn't have to, and he had one of the best arms in left field history, I would imagine.
Without a doubt.
If he doesn't even have to suit up and go out there in between innings, you know, who knows?
Keep that bat in your hand and swing it hard.
Another guy I'm looking at is Lance McCullers, you know, with the Astros. His last game was October 17th. Of 2018, game 4 of the ALCS, but, you know, he's been pretty effective as a starter. In fact, among 117 pitchers with at least 400 innings from 2015 to 2018, he ranked 31st in ERA. You know, and coming in from the American League, that's not bad. That's pretty good, actually. 11th in FIP, and 16th in strikeout rate, 26.6%, which is crazy. You don't really think about this guy, because he's never really had a full season, you know. He's never been able to top 22 starts in or 128 innings in a season. But, you know, he's only 26 years old right now, you know. And he still has one of the best curveballs in the game. So the fact that Gerrit Cole is gone now and out of that lineup, we could see a guy like him step up, and he could be a nice sleeper later rounds in your fantasy draft, or maybe he won't even get drafted at all because we haven't heard his name in so long. You know, another guy, Sal Perez, you know, he missed all of 2019 with Tommy John surgery, you know, but, and he did test positive for COVID this year, but he is apparently asymptomatic. So once he passes through that, you know, which is, I think he's already going now, you know, he's always been a sort of first half guy. And he's always said that the summer and the long season has sort of always worn a tear on his body, and his batting stats usually trickle off the second half of the season. But this guy, you know, his numbers, just look at his first half numbers, are he's 274, 304, 459 in the first half, which, again, for like a late round guy, because catchers don't usually go in the first, you know, 10, 15 rounds anyway, he could be a dark horse. He could be a guy that's going to give you 15 home runs, you know, from the catcher position.
Especially if he has the starting slot.
Well, I'm sure he will. I mean, he's kind of like the leader in that clubhouse, right? So, barring some sort of catastrophic injury, or maybe the COVID creeps up a little later or something weird like that, I don't know. He's another guy that, again, like, just because of this season and the way that it's going to be, you know, I might value a guy like that more than I would have in previous years. You know, not to say you should go high on a catcher, because I don't think you ever should, but, you know. Now, you were...
Something to think about.
You were talking to me about cardboard cutouts?
Cardboard cutouts. Yes. A number of teams are, in fact, offering fans the opportunity to buy a cardboard cutout of themselves to be placed in the stands during games.
Fancy. How fancy.
It is. The average seems to be just under about $100. Not every team is.
This isn't just season ticket holders? I thought I saw something about season ticket holders.
I do not know if it's limited to season ticket holders.
Or maybe
or
it's
not.
Free for them and for normal people like us.
Yeah, well, I know season ticket holders, their cardboard cutouts do go into their seats.
Their actual seats.
Seats.
That makes sense.
I know some teams, like the A's, are offering their fans the additional advantage that if your cardboard cutout gets hit by a foul ball, the A's will then send you your foul ball.
Is that real?
That is real.
I did not hear that.
A discussion I had with...
Now that is worth shilling out the $100.
The daughter of a 20-year season ticket holder for the A's.
Wow.
And that's what she said what was happening. And then I later on read that Stephen Piscotty. Yes.
It's like biscotti but with a P.
Okay, Piscotty. He has said that if he hits the ball that hits one of these cardboard cutouts, that he will actually sign the ball and send it.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool. I think that is that.
That's awesome.
I, you know, I don't know why any team would not do something like that. It sounds just like a great way to like earn a fan for life if they weren't already by giving the fact that they spent money to put a cardboard image of themselves out in the stands.
Now that seems like
spirit, I guess.
Who's printing out these thousands of... Is it just like a headshot or is it like a full cardboard
cutout?
That
I don't know. I think it just might be a cutout bust.
Seems like more than $100. That seems way worth it. I saw the Dodgers one was like $300 or something.
Right, but the Mariners are only charging $30.
Yeah, well, I guess it's... Yeah, the market kind of decides.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, at $99 for the Giants, you know, wouldn't be necessarily a bad idea if you've got the extra scratch. It'd be kind of fun, especially if you have a potential of getting a ball out of the thing.
Now, I've been in close contact with a lot of my old coworkers. You know, I don't have a job currently. Right. I mean, this is my full-time job, of course. I get paid a lot of money to do this show. But please hit our PayPal.
Please hit our PayPal button.
But there's a picture of one of our mutual friends whose name, well, his name's Julio. You know who he is. Okay. And he's this picture of him, and he's wearing this fanny pack, and it's this old picture, and we always make fun of him about it, and we always, like, circulate this photo. It's terrible. And we were trying to pool our money to get that photo put up in the Giant stands.
Oh, my God. How come no one told me that? I totally yeah. would have thrown
Are
in
you
for
in?
That.
All right. That makes our 10 bucks now, like, 750 or so. Right. Yeah, there we go. All right, yeah. Because that has to be on there. Because he's a huge Giants fan anyway.
He is.
And I would pay that money, just the 10 bucks. I'm not going to pay the 100, but you split it 10 ways. Yeah. And he does not want it. He's so upset. It's just so good. This is how I've been biding my time.
Entertaining yourself?
Yeah, you know, cyberbullying and the like.
Well, I got to go. My damn wiener kids are listening.
Now, is 60 games long enough to determine a winner? This is a philosophical...
It is a philosophical question, and I found someone who attempted to answer this.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I found an analysis, breakdown of what 60 games look like in a normal season. And if you take the first 60 games of a normal season, which would be till about June 12th, it's about the 60 game mark for most schedules.
Yeah.
So since 1962, not counting the 1972, 81, 94, and 95 seasons that were all shortened because of strike, who qualified for the postseason? Who qualified for the postseason that would have qualified as of June 12th? Who did qualify for the postseason that would not have qualified for June 12th, and how much did they improve? Who did not qualify for the postseason that would have qualified for June 12th, and how bad did they do over the rest of the season? And how many each of these teams won the World Series or their league pennant? So that's what he looked at. And briefly, ultimately, since 62, 227 teams have made the postseason that would have made the postseason as of June 12th of that season.
Okay.
41 of those teams went on to win the World Series, and 80 won their league championship. That's including the World Series winners.
But how many teams would have made it that didn't end up making it?
So
the most important.
So 108 teams made the postseason that would not have qualified as of June 12th.
So about half.
Right, and of those teams, only 14 won the World Series, including the Nationals last year.
So 14 of those?
33 of them won the league championship.
Yeah.
So 33 out of 108 who would not have made it in June 12th.
Right, right.
So he goes on to say that in most of these seasons, the amount that those teams improved to make it was not, you know, a huge amount. They were pretty close. They may have just been just under. There were only really two exceptions from that. If I can find it here, I wrote down some of them, but not all of them. Thank you. Right. So it's far from impossible to make the postseason if you wouldn't qualify as of June 12th, or about 60 games. Your would-be playoff status at that time is a reasonably good but not ironclad indicator of whether you'll reach the postseason and have success there at the end of the season.
Okay, so in a nutshell, yes, it's enough. But of course, there's going to be some
right. There's lots of things. There's, you know, exceptions to every rule, right, of course. And the teams that would have made it and didn't, those were historically tanking teams. And those that didn't, wouldn't have qualified after 60 games, that made it, had historic runs at the end of the season to be able to make it.
Well,
so,
of course, you're thinking about last year. Think about the Nationals and the way they started the season. They wouldn't even be close to winning their division within the first 60 games.
Right. They were even below 500. And they're the exception to that rule.
Right.
So it's possible, yes. I mean, it is a good indicator. It's not the best, but it is generally enough to know which ones are the good teams and which ones are the not so good teams.
I agree. I think this is it. You know, back in like May, I
would like to see 100 games.
But I mean, look, I had already like resigned myself like a couple months ago, and I feel ashamed to even admit this. And I was just like, oh, it's over. Yeah, we're not going to have a season, and if we do, it's not going to mean anything. But I have made a full 180 since then, and it didn't take long. But I mean, I think more than ever now, this season's going to mean more than, I mean, any season like in recent memory, except for maybe 2001 when the Yankees won the pennant right after 9/11, and of course they lost. But you know, this will be a season that everybody thinks about, talks about, you know, hey, you know, do you remember, were you alive in 2020, you know, the COVID season. Now that's of course the season, if the season actually finishes and everything goes to plan, but I'm excited, man. I think this is going to be one of the most exciting seasons possibly ever, or at least in our lifetime, you know, because like you said, every game is going to be
worth so much.
Yeah, it's going to be a postseason birth push. You know, 60 games isn't a lot. And it also evens out the playing field to maybe smaller market teams, teams that don't have, on paper, stellar lineups, who can just, you know, I mean, the Rays always baffle me. I don't know how they do it, but they do it, you know. They don't have any, like, sexy guy. I mean, they will have Glasnow back. They will have Snell back. So their starting pitching is going to be insane. But I don't think they're going to have a starter every day, and they always seem to figure it out, you know.
Right.
Other teams can do that too,
and some of these guys too. They're so competitive by nature, you know, that they're gonna want it. I mean, there's the quote from July 4th from Gerrit Cole, now with the Yankees. He said, told reporters that when it comes down to it, players just want to complete and get after it. It's going to be a different season, but there's only going to be one coronavirus World Series. And that's unique unto itself. I don't see why you wouldn't want to take that trophy home.
Amen.
So the guys are gonna come out. They're gonna want it. They're gonna want to win. They're gonna try to win. Short season or not, it's gonna be a competitive. Should translate to a very fun baseball season.
You're right, man. There's no more dog days of summer. Like it's,
no, this is it.
They're all gonna be extremely focused.
It's pennant race from the get go.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, in talking about some of these new rules, though, you know, obviously the universal DH, which terrifies me, but the whole thing of no spitting, no touching, how is this going to work?
How are they going to enforce that?
These are like professional spitters.
Yeah, basically you can't chew tobacco, you can't...
Sunflower seeds?
Can't have sunflower seeds.
Like, the name of the sunflower seeds is Spitz, right? With a Z? Like, that's literally the
Dusty,
name of
Dusty,
it. Like.
Dusty Baker with his with his insensate...
a toothpick?
Toothpick chewing?
No.
Nope. Not gonna think. They will be allowed to chew bubblegum, but that's about it.
Man, that's going to be... I
guess they're going to allow pitchers to have a moist rag with
them.
Yeah,
I saw that.
Because you can't lick your finger.
But right. You could have a moist rag in your back pocket. Like, that's not going to be abused. Are you kidding me? A moist rag is... Dude, this is insane. This is going to be like Juan Marichal. He's going to be like cutting the ball, putting like some chewing gum on. It's just going to be nuts. Like, oh, what's that soaked in your rag? Oh, it's just water. No, it's not water. It's like Kool-Aid, something super sticky, you know? I got, like, clear Gatorade. I'm going to do it.
Right.
I mean...
Yeah. Soak that rag with sugar water and wring it out so it's not dripping wet, but it's still going to be nice and sticky.
Why not? What are they going to do? Do, like, a lab analysis mid-game? Like, let me see that rag. No. Of course not. You have to bring your own rosin bag, apparently. And look, if you put a wet rag in your back pocket and you're wearing skin tight pants like most of these guys are, aren't you going to have this giant,
it's gonna be very
wet stain?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Look, I'm sure all these rules will be abandoned after the first day.
Yeah,
but
we'll see.
They try to enforce it, that it's going to be a game within a game. I mean, I mean, how ridiculous. I don't know. But yeah, keep them covered. Are the umps going to be wearing face masks, the guys in the field?
I don't know.
Behind the plate, obviously.
This is one of Buster Posey's main concerns is that the catcher
is
so exposed. They got two people within 6 feet.
Buster,
below
come on, bro.
So,
come on, bro. I mean, jeez. He's not wrong.
He's not wrong.
But, I mean, come on, you know?
Well, so if we'll know if pitchers start to go down with the sickness this year, if catchers start to go down with the sickness this year, well, we'll know that it's probably the umpire's fault.
Yeah,
that was weird, wild stuff.
Yeah, it's there's gonna be a lot of new rules. It's gonna be kind of weird to see. but Clint Frazier doesn't seem to have a problem with that, so he's gonna be doing it. Maybe we'll see guys wearing more of a mask. I don't know. It's not impossible to see. Now, this is something that I was thinking about recently. Could we possibly this year see a reliever win the Cy Young Award?
Well, I think that if we're counting signs of the apocalypse, then it's definitely possible.
Now, on that same note, do you remember the last reliever to win the Cy Young?
I believe it was Dennis Eckersley, wasn't it?
No. A guy has done that before that, who was, I'm sure, the bane of your existence for many years. He did it in 2003. That's the last person to do it.
2003.
Arguably the greatest closer ever of all time.
Oh, yes. It was. Would have been... jeez. That name is right there. I just...
You suck, McBain!
Exactly. I do. I don't know. I'm totally blanking on...
Eric Gagne.
Gagne.
Eric Gagne. Of course. Gagne. That year, in 2003, he put up in 82 and a third innings, 55 saves, 137 strikeouts, 1.2 ERA. Now, there is a slight precedent for a reliever winning the Cy Young in a shortened season, albeit nowhere near as short as the 2020 season is going to be, but with the 1981 award going to Raleigh Fingers, that year the Brewers played 109 games, so, you know, still obviously a lot more than 60, but still not nearly a full season. And he also won the MVP that year. Yeah, so he went 78 innings, he only had 28 saves. I guess back then, though, that wasn't as big of a deal. 61 strikeouts, 1.04 ERA. Now, obviously, the first name, maybe it's obvious because there's a lot of really good relievers right now, but that I think of for this coming season would be Josh Hader. You know, I mean, even in 2019 when his home run rate went up slightly, now that's obviously because everybody's home run rate went up slightly as a batter, he still had a strikeout rate of 47.8%. which was the fourth highest of all time. And his 16.4 K per nine was fifth all time in a year when he gave up more home runs than he'd ever given up. On top of that, his strikeout rate against the other four NL Central teams last season was 49.3%. He's basically striking them out 50% of the time. Everybody in his division, which he's going to be playing, of course, this year. And the AL Central, as we know, is even weaker. Is he just going to rake? Is he just going to be put up, like, baseball? I mean, like, video game numbers?
I'd say it's certainly possible. And, it's going to be fun to watch for a number of reasons, just to see what the differences will be.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now, actually. Speaking of the AL Central, the Tigers and the White Sox were in the bottom three, the three highest team strikeout percentages in 2019. So he's just gonna, I mean, it's just gonna be disturbing. Plus, obviously, he can go more than an inning, two innings sometimes.
Right.
This could be the year of Josh Hader. All the fantasy owners that have this guy.
I mean, oof. How many innings did he pitch last year? End up pitching last year.
That's a good question.
What I've heard some people saying is that pitchers could be treated a little bit differently this year, given that it is such a short season that the pitch counts.
61 games, sorry, last year.
61 games?
Yeah, he pitched in, yeah. And 75 innings.
Yeah, so he has the potential to be able to hit, you know, another 60 games. He can pitch in every single game.
Yeah.
For an inning. And, you know, I mean, he's not necessarily used to pitching every day, but say he's
still young,
you know,
yeah.
Say he pitches 3 days in a row, takes a day off, you know, he's going to, you know, that'd be still good 50 games.
Yeah. And he's not unaccustomed to going 1.2 innings, 2 innings, you know, 1.1 innings. Like,
right.
For a long time, he was always averaging over one inning per game or per appearance. So, yeah. I mean, his career ERA is 2.42. Again, last year he was 2.62.
Now, of course, anyone who comes in will have to go at least three batters.
Oh, God, you're right. That new rule, too. Yeah. Is that going to be... That's going to be forever, right?
I believe that is a forever rule.
Yeah. Yes. Unless the inning ends, right? Or
yeah, the inning ends, yeah. then the pitcher can come out. But it's still going to, you know, it's a forever rule unless it's quickly proven to be a stupid rule. And
it's a very stupid rule.
It gets canceled next year. One can only hope.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. Whatever. What are you going to do? You see, Puig got a new home.
They did. The Braves.
Yeah.
The Braves.
Look at that outfield now. Acuna, Puig, Ozuna. It's going to be pretty solid. Plus, they have Adam Duvall and Ender Inciarte also.
Yeah, and they had a good team last year. It looks like they're going to have a good team this year.
Man, Trout's just... I mean, Puig is just, you know, he's just been quietly productive like his whole career. He's like a 270 career hitter, you know. And he's also one of, what is this, 8 players since 2017 to... have 70 plus home runs and 40 plus stolen bases. Only 7 other guys have done that.
Yeah. I think that Puig is a great pickup for any team. I know I saw some reaction from Giants fans when he was announced, I guess it was yesterday or the day before, that he was going to the Braves, that a lot of Giants fans were relieved that he didn't come to the Giants. I mean, and I don't know why.
Yeah, you guys hate winning, right?
This,
I forgot.
This he would be a great addition to any team who is looking for power and production in the outfield.
Yeah.
Not let alone his arm.
In right field, and like the biggest right field in the game. Yeah. I mean, he's got a disgusting arm. Like he, yeah. I think he would do really well
at AT&T. Yeah, I did too. I don't understand the reaction, but
now in a sense I get it, because when the Dodgers got Brian Wilson, you know, I was not happy, and even after the year went on and people came around, I never came around to that guy. And then I'm still convinced he was a mole. Planted in our organization
I was so surprised when he went to the Dodgers, but you know, and then there was that one game in Dodger Stadium.
You're so happy right now. Yeah,
there's that one game where I forget who it was hit the ball out towards the Dodgers bullpen, and there he was, like right in front of the clear gate from the bullpen looking in. The ball sailed over the outfielder's head, and it bounced up against the wall, and there was Brian Wilson celebrating in the wrong uniform. And it was like, what is this guy? He forgot what team he was on.
Oh, God, that guy's the worst. That guy is the worst.
But, you know, he also didn't last too long after that anyway.
He lasted too long, but in my opinion. But, yeah, no, you're right. I know. It's... God. Yeah, but anyway, so I can kind of see, yeah, but years removed. I mean, Puig hasn't been a Dodger in years. I mean, you know, I don't see what the big deal is.
Yeah, most people don't like his attitude, but you know, he plays
attitude.
Hard.
Yeah, he plays hard.
He plays hard. He's competitive, yeah. And he has fun out in the field. And there's nothing wrong.
He's very competitive. I mean, you remember like that big fight when you know, when Puig was a Red and they were playing the Pirates.
Oh, right. It was the one guy against the whole Pirates, right?
It wasn't Keon Keller. It was... everybody listening is so pissed
right now. We'll probably get a mail telling us what episode we talked
during
about.
During that giant rumble, Puig took on the entire team. Do you remember this?
Yeah,
I do. He wasn't even on the team anymore. They had just announced that he got traded to the Indians that game.
Right.
He didn't even care. It was him and David Bell, the manager, going out, flinging dudes, like throwing at the opposing manager, fighting. And then Puig yelling at everybody but Votto and Bell for not fighting. You know, that's the guy you want on your team, man. You want
fired
that guy.
Up.
Yeah.
Fired up.
Amir Garrett. Jesus Christ. Oh, my God. All right. Sorry. Yeah. Amir Garrett was the pitcher. And he charged the dugout. I've never seen that before. That was one of the greatest things I've ever seen.
Yeah.
He charged the dugout. It's just one on, you know, 30. Amazing. Anyway. We're gonna run a little long today because, you know, what the hell. You usually have to work after this, but I don't think you're working today.
No, in fact, I'm not.
You know, we were talking about anniversaries earlier, and it's another anniversary today. There's something about July 15th, and maybe it's when guys start finding their stroke, pitchers and hitters. You know, guys that are tuned in. And we talked about Albert Bell, obviously, and Cody Bellinger hitting for the cycle, and Satchel Paige throwing a no-hitter. But Nolan Ryan... in 73, had one of the greatest pitching performances ever. He got a 100 game score on this game. A 100.
100 game score?
Yeah, and it wasn't even a perfect game. It's unbelievable. So in 73, Nolan Ryan, no-hitter, 17 strikeouts. 17 strikeout, no-hitter.
17 strikeouts, yeah. Wow.
Now, that's actually... at that point was the record. It still is the record for strikeouts in a no-hitter. And Max Scherzer tied that in 2015.
Sounds right.
And he had 17 strikeouts. Yeah. But Nolan Ryan also is like has three in the top 10 in terms of, you know, strikeouts per no-hitters. Kershaw famously also had 15 in that basically perfect game. You know, I mean, where Hanley Ramirez fumbled the routine grounder and... you know, Clayton only got the no-hitter. But that his Kershaw's no-hitter with 15 strikeouts against the best offensive team in the National League at that point, which was the Rockies, is one of the highest game scores in baseball history, even though it wasn't a perfect game, because it ostensibly was a perfect game. I mean, he's
right.
No walks. He didn't do, you know, nobody was on base except for that one error. But anyway, I don't know. Something about this date. It's interesting. I can't wait to see Kershaw's no-hitter this year. It's going to be great. Hopefully it's not against the Giants, though, so I can actually watch the damn game, but here to hear first. And the funny thing, though, about that 73 game, in that famous game against the Tigers, it was when Nolan Ryan was an Angel, Detroit Tiger Norm Cash, who had already struck out three times that game, tried to go up in the ninth inning with a table leg. But the umpire noticed and then made him use a regular bat. Is that going to happen anymore? Stuff like that will never happen again.
I don't know. With the world climate these days and everyone seeming losing their sense of humor, it's probably unlikely. But
how dare you? I'm offended by that.
Hey now.
You were also talking to me about a Rangers curse.
A Rangers
now, this
curse.
This is something
yes.
I know nothing about.
Yes, the Rangers curse. the Rangers, of course, are opening a brand new ballpark this year.
Right. Didn't they already have like a fire or something going on there earlier?
There was a problem during the construction. Anyway, yeah.
Yes, sorry.
But I think they've had an extra couple of months to deal with any problems like that. But the Rangers' curse is that every time that the Rangers have opened a new stadium, the season has been shortened.
What?
And in 1972, there was a strike. That was their first year in Texas.
At Arlington? Okay.
That
was their inaugural year.
Yeah.
I didn't even realize that.
They were before then the Washington Senators.
Okay.
Then in 1994, they opened the ballpark in Arlington, and that was the strike sort and seasoned. So now in 2020, opening another new stadium, and we have a shortened season.
Maybe they are cursed.
Yeah.
Maybe it is. But as far as it goes, you know, it's definitely going to be a season of firsts, regardless of the length of the season.
They're going to be pretty bad, right?
Another first that I found for this coming season is that this first time in 146 years since 1873, the Cubs and the Braves are not scheduled to be to play each other.
Really?
Really. That is
the
longest streak
in
certainly American sports of two teams playing each other.
Yeah, because the Dodgers and the Giants are always in the same division, even.
Right, you know, and they didn't. And the Dodgers didn't start until, well, certainly after 1873.
1888 or 1892. Yeah.
And the Giants since 1883. So it hasn't even. They haven't been even. Both of those. You know, haven't been around that long to have that kind of a streak. But the Cubs and the Braves have played each other in a scheduled game every year since 1873 until this year.
That's kind of out of left field there.
Yeah, it is kind of out of left field. Just like a little tidbit I found about that particular phrase. Out of left field.
Yeah.
Came out of left field in the original ballpark of the Cubs before there was a Wrigley Field. There was West Side Park.
Pre-Wrigley.
Pre-Wrigley.
Wow.
Okay. So pre-1917, I think it was. 1912.
1908, right? 17? 12?
1908 was when since the World Series, but Wrigley's I don't recall right off the top of my head when Wrigley was built, but it was before then anyway. So
1914.
Yes.
With our powers combined.
Yes. So thank you for that. So there used to be a mental hospital. Just on the other side of the left field wall.
A sanitarium.
Yeah.
Basically a loony bin that it was worse than a prison, I'm assuming, back then.
Right.
19th century.
And it was so close that both players and fans could hear very strange sounds emitting from the building. So it became a saying that if something was very strange or odd, it was said to come out of left field because that's where all those strange sounds were coming from. At least
through
in Chicago.
The shrieks and the cries of pain and helplessness. Good Lord.
Yeah. So
they're at it again.
Love those random bits of trivia. I've found a lot since there really isn't a whole. There hasn't really been a whole lot of other baseball news. There's been a lot of just like wacky facts I've come across. Yeah.
Truth over facts.
That's pretty good, man. That is disturbing, and I don't really know what else to say about that.
All Maybe there isn't anything to say about that.
All righty. Get to the last week's trivia question. I wish it was last week.
In the before times, there was a trivia question.
Yeah, in the more in the sweeter, more innocent time. Yes. Actually, it was your question. What was last week's trivia question there?
It was... We went through this. We confirmed it. It was... it was... let's see. Let me have it written down here. Let me get to it in my notes here. Yes, so, okay. So it goes back to 1955 when the...
Dodgers won the World Series? Oh, hell yeah.
Well... Yes.
Oh, sorry. What?
But I don't know if that has anything to do with it. But that was also the first year that intentional walks became a stat. And in all of that time.
Oh, now it's all coming back to me.
Okay. Yeah, yes. In all of that time, only one person who is not named Barry Bonds has been intentionally walked with the bases loaded. So that means only two. It's only happened to two people. One of which was Barry Bonds, and it happened a couple of times. But only one other time, other than with Barry Bonds, has a player been intentionally walked with the bases loaded. Who was that player?
Huh. Okay. All righty. Let's see. We have a lot of.
I'm sure after 3 months, there's been a lot of people looking for this.
Now, I don't know this one. I don't know any of these. Or, you know, it's been a long 3 months, 4 months, I guess, possibly.
Indeed.
Let's see. We got Jerry W. in Sacramento says, Larry Walker.
Well, that is an interesting name, but
I like that guess.
Despite his name... He was not. That is an incorrect
answer.
Took
me a little while.
Everybody just cool out.
Yeah, I did. That's maybe Jerry was being a little cheeky there. All right. We got, let's see. Tony Swaim in Paso Robles says Ken Griffey Jr. Now, that sounds right.
Griffey, yes, but Griffey wasn't known for. Being intentionally walked.
Well, apparently nobody is known for that.
Except for Barry Bonds.
But
no, Ken Griffey Jr., a good guess. He is definitely a feared hitter. Has over 600 home runs in his career. But
630, right? Yeah.
Not the man in question.
Okay. We got...
Sorry, Chewy.
Marcus Rhodes in San Diego says, Mark McGuire. That makes sense. These are all great guesses.
Mark McGuire,
great
guesses. Great hitters, but McGuire is not the correct answer.
Jeez.
Guys need to be thinking, I think, a little bit more recent than some of these players.
A little bit more recent. All right, well, I'm going to give it a go then. What about the guy that's like in jail now? Josh Hamilton. That's my guess.
Josh Hamilton would be the correct
answer.
No
way! Are you serious?
On August 17th, 2008, he was walked intentionally with the bases loaded.
Wow. Yeah, man. Yeah. That's hell yeah. He's, you know, that guy was crazy. People were like terrified of him.
Yeah.
In like that like 4 or 5 year period there. I mean, he was
lights
out.
He got the Barry Bonds treatment.
Wow. I never get these. That's great. All right. I'm gonna buy myself a beer. How about that?
Cocaine is a hell of a drug.
Man. Wow, Mr. Josh, look at that. Right out of left field. I just pulled that out of nowhere, right? All right. Well, congrats to me. I've been doing nothing but like reading old baseball stats and watching old baseball games from like the 80s and the 90s. It's fun to go back and watch those, but it's also like depressing when you get halfway through and you realize you're only watching this because there's no real baseball going on. But now that we have the guarantee coming, it'll be nice. You know, go back and watch some of those old games. I just like also the way that, you know, coaches acted. I don't know, the way announcers talked and not even like super old timey. I'm just talking like the 80s and the like early 90s, you know.
Yeah, well, even back then, more games were broadcast on radio than TV.
Yeah.
So a lot of the announcers and commentators have their training in radio. And in radio,
right,
as you know, is not a visual medium.
Right.
So you really have to be able to describe what is going on.
Oh yeah.
In such a way that you can really picture it without having to the benefit of looking at a screen and seeing. You know, there's a lot of dead air in televised baseball games because the commentators don't feel like they need to fill the air with description because you could just look.
Right.
But back in the 90s and the 80s and before, there's still more radio than TV. So the commentators would talk about the game and during those spaces that are now just dead air.
Some may call it a lost art. Oh, and in most fact, definitely. I think MLB is doing a poll right now. To see who has the most popular broadcast team, radio or TV. It's actually something that's been going on right now. I actually did it myself.
Hmm.
And it was hard for me to, because, you know, obviously I picked the Dodgers, and then, you know, they say, you know, 1 to 5, like, what do you rate them? And I couldn't, as much as I love Oral, and I love Nomar, and I love, you know, Rick Monday and Charlie Steiner and Joe, what's our new guy? Joe Davis, is that his name? Yeah. You know, I look at that guy, I'm like, that guy's like as old as I am. Like, you know, a guy in his 30s shouldn't be doing this job, you know. But then again, you know, Vince Scully started when he was like 20, so.
Right.
But the problem for me was like giving them all 5 stars or whatever was that they're not Vince Scully, you know. Right. So like there's only one
Vince Scully is your gold standard.
Yeah.
Everything else is going to.
Yeah. I'm not going to give anybody a full score because he gets the full score.
Yeah, so this guy gets a 4. Why does he only get 4? Well, because he's not Vince Scully.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's not necessarily fair, but it's not kind of the truth.
Yeah, exactly.
He's
so
not Vince Scully.
Needless to
and
say,
that's true.
Yeah, I don't think the Dodgers will win that one just because of that. You know, sad but true. You know, but Euchre's still going, right? And the Chicago broadcasts, the Cubs at least. I don't know about the White Sox. I don't really like that Heegan guy. That guy kind of
Heegan.
Yeah. Like if you have like
put it on the board. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. And clearly, I've watched a lot of White Sox games throughout the years, and you have too. Probably for fantasy reasons.
Well,
but.
I mean, it's, you know, I mean, you also highlights too. You know, you hear some of these broadcasters when they're calling the highlights and you watch the highlight rules, MLB, ESPN, whatever. They'll sometimes play those sounds. But
I know, you know, if it's like the Yankees, and every time they hit a home run, you know, he has like a witty catchphrase, nickname. That okay, fine, because what is there, 4 or 5 home runs in a game. But if it's every time there's a run, every time there's a strikeout, I mean, it's a little much.
Yeah.
It's a little much.
No, for sure. If you overuse something, it loses its appeal.
I get it, though. Hey, look, you know, if I ever did that professionally, I'd have to have some sort of catchphrase. What's my catchphrase? I don't really have one.
We'll have to come up with one between now and maybe the end of this season. We'll get to a catchphrase.
I just like to steal Hank's. You know, hey now, I like that one. I'll just even though it's not mine.
Hey now,
you know it's you know I'm gonna appropriate it. I'm gonna make it my own. I don't have a catchphrase. And thank God this is not a visual medium because you do not want to see what we look like. I definitely have a face for radio. So you're welcome, everybody else. You know, we get emails. Well, why don't you guys do a video podcast? No. Trust me on this one. Okay. Now that brings us to.
You don't want to see this.
This week's trivia question.
This week's. You have the.
I do actually, and it comes. You know, this is sort of ties into who was it? Pablo Fullerton in his letter. You know, he was asking if we envision any single season records happening. You know, we talked about maybe starting pitchers having a sub-1 ERA, maybe a team obviously getting the highest winning percentage. It's possible. especially maybe for a team in the Central Division. But what I was thinking is, and this is like maybe my favorite stat, is 400, right? A guy that could hit 400 in a season.
It's 400. Oh, talking about batting average.
Batting average, right. Okay. Not 400 home runs, no. You know, obviously the last guy to do is Ted Williams,
of
course.
In a season, that'd be tough to do. 400 home runs, yeah. Yeah. It'd be tough to do in a career. But
tough, yeah. You'd probably get beaned a lot if you're hitting that many home runs.
I think so.
So, you know, I was thinking this year is very possible a guy can finish the year with by batting 400. Of course, you know, last year, 2019, we saw Cody Bellinger hit 400 through the first 49 games. That's only 11 off.
It'd be super exciting if he can do that this year. God. Oh, my God. It would be insane.
Well, you know, he's adjusting. He adjusted his swing because he didn't like his, like, last 2 months, his performance. You know, he kind of fell off. He still hit 300 on the year, but he was hitting, like, 330 going into, like, August, you know. But anyway, so he said he kind of fixed it. So that could be good or bad. I don't know. We'll see. I'm sure he knows, so I'm sure it'll be fine. But that led me to think, you know, who was, or could it happen, and who could get it? Now, obviously, I think of, like, Joey Votto. And Joey Votto in 2014, I believe it was, did hit 400 in the second half. You know, he went into the All-Star break hitting, like, 256. And it was, like, the first year he didn't even make the All-Star team in, like, 8 or 9 years, something crazy like that. You know, it's Joey Votto. He's, like, the greatest hitter since Ichiro. And certainly the most patient. But he ended up second half hitting like 406 or something ridiculous. Just bananas. Just
ripping the cover off the ball.
Four hits for every 10 at-bats. I mean, it's crazy. But he did it, right? And that's only, that was 82 games. But, of course, he didn't do that to start a season. So, the question here, because I was curious to see, who was the last player to carry a 400 average through the first 60 games of a season? Not the first half, just the first 60 games. Because obviously Bellinger got close. But
through basically the first week and a half of June.
Right, exactly.
It's a great question.
Yeah.
And when you told me this off air, this question, I can't think of who that would be.
Yeah, I didn't tell you. Yeah.
Good luck answering that question. I'll be searching myself. I don't really have a guess.
Well,
right
I got
now,
yours
so.
From last time, so now it's your you time did, to get yeah, mine. But hopefully somebody else out there gets it. Leave the answer on the Podomatic comments under the episode. Email us, baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know. Give us your thoughts, your answers here. We promise we won't have another 3-month hiatus. We should be back now. As long as you or I don't get it after this, then we'll know we're good to go. Right.
Right. Yeah.
And hell, if we both get it, then you know, then we'll do it every day. Right. What else are you gonna be doing?
Sure. Daily daily coronavirus baseball podcast coming checking your way.
I think we'd be trending after that.
Maybe so. We'd have a lot more coughs than we do anything, but.
That is true. Let's see. You know what? Raise a beer. Enjoy your time off if you have it. If you don't, then just enjoy some baseball because we are getting a little semblance of normalcy coming back. So
have some nice live sporting entertainment.
Yes, sir.
It'll be good. 5 days' time, we will be able to switch on the TV and see some baseball.
Already? Oh, yeah. Exhibition game.
Exhibition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Still count.
They don't count, but it counts for us. It counts for my psyche in that regard. On that note, from San Francisco, California, I am Adam Nelson.
And I am Samuel Paul. Remember, baseball is life. The rest, just corona.
Oh, no, no, no.
No. Okay, yeah, just details.
Thank you. Go watch some baseball.
5 days.